So, what do we see when we look at the world? What do we see or observe going on in the world around us today? And what do we notice in our own lives? How would we describe what's happening to us in response to what's happening in the world and what's going on in us? What would we say about the state of our own hearts this morning? You know, perhaps we see war and conflict, disappointment, sickness, death or destruction, frustration, dissatisfaction. Are these the things that we see when we look around or when we look within ourselves? Now, it's all quite negative, I realise that, but then the world is a dark place, and perhaps more noticeably so at the present time. We've had a short break from Ecclesiastes, but today we're carrying on with our series, picking up from where we left off, which was halfway through chapter 5. And as we said before, Ecclesiastes is a difficult book to read. Not because it's very long and complicated, but rather because it deals with difficult matters. The teacher who speaks to us through this book is looking at life. And life has its challenges, as we all know. Right at the beginning of today's passage, in verse 13 of chapter 5, the teacher makes this comment: I have seen a grievous evil under the sun. And he's only mentioned evil once before, back in chapter 4, at the beginning of chapter 4, where he says, again, I looked and saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they have no comforter. Power was on the side of their oppressors, and they have no comforter. And I declared that the dead who had already died are happier than the living who are still alive. But better than both is the one who has never been born, who has not seen the evil that is done under the sun. Now, this is a negative view. And perhaps we wouldn't agree with everything that the teacher says. But then again, there are probably many people living in parts of the world today who would share this perspective. People living in terrible suffering, terrible situations, terrible conditions. People who are being mistreated and oppressed by others. And how would we cope, I wonder, if we found ourselves in that kind of situation, if this was our experience of life, what we've just read, if this was our view of the world? Surely we would be in despair if this is what we saw as we looked around or as we looked at our lives and the lives of those close to us. And if that's what we find at the beginning of chapter 4 of Ecclesiastes, then by the time we get to chapter 5 and verse 13, the teacher is writing not only about evil, but about a grievous evil that he's seen under the sun. And then in verse 16 of chapter 5, we have the same phrase repeated: this too is a grievous evil. And then a little bit further down, chapter 6, verse 1, he writes this: I've seen another evil under the sun, and it weighs heavily on mankind. And at the end of verse 2 of chapter 6, we have the same thing again. This is hevel. This is vapor. A grievous evil. So we get the idea that the teacher is writing about what he sees in the world around him that is evil. Or as he goes on to say, a grievous evil. And the problem of evil in the world and in our lives is real. We can't pretend that it's not. Evil is a problem. And in this passage, the writer gives us examples, and he asks a number of questions to make us think about how the world looks to us. I like to think of myself as having a positive attitude, a positive outlook on life. I have this optimism that is perhaps more optimistic than others. But reading this book of Ecclesiastes is having an impact on me. I can see that there is evil in the world. And the evil's not just out there, the evil is in here. There's evil in my heart, there's evil in your hearts. Evil in the way that I think, evil in the way that I act. Evil in the hearts and minds of all of us. And that's a real problem. And when we see that, when we see evil in ourselves and in the world around us, I wonder how we respond to that. What's our response to seeing evil? How do we respond to the darkness that we see? And perhaps one response to evil and darkness is to look for good. Look for good, look for what is good in the world. And it's true, the teacher mentions good as well as evil throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. And it's here in the passage that we're looking at this morning, in chapter 5, verse 18. He writes, "This is what I have observed to be good." That's what the teacher says. And he's already mentioned that idea of good and evil in chapters 2 and in chapters 3. Let me just read the verses. He says, "I have said to myself, come now, I will test you to find out what is good. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live." So is that the way that we combat evil, that we fight against evil, by focusing on what is good? Is it enough if the good outweighs the evil? Is that how it works in the world? Well, Paul says something like this in his letter to the Christians in Rome. So Romans chapter 12, verse 21, you don't need to turn to it. Paul gives this instruction, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." And that's helpful. But is that what the teacher is saying here in Ecclesiastes? I'm not sure that it is, which is why we find questions right at the end of chapter 6 in verse 12. The teacher asks, "For who knows what is good for a person in life during the few and meaningless days they pass through like a shadow? Who can tell them what will happen under the sun after they are gone?" So for the teacher, those questions remain. Seems like his view on life is limited. And as we approach the halfway point in this book, the teacher is writing about what he sees as good and evil, but he still has questions. Remember, he set out on this mission to find out about the world, to discover things about the world. But there's a difference between his situation and our situation. There's lots of differences, in fact. First of all, he's the king of Israel with great wealth at his disposal. And in this section that we're looking at this morning, he seems to be focusing on wealth and possessions. The grievous evil that he sees has to do with wealth that is hoarded or lost. He's thinking about the inheritance that children receive or perhaps don't receive. And he states the truth that we all know in verse 15 of chapter 5. "Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands." So he's asking this all-important question, what do we gain from all our toil? And his description of life in chapter 5, verse 17, if you look at it, is quite sobering. "All their days they eat in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger." That's a pretty negative view of life. Hopefully it's not one that we share. But there are people, I'm sure, maybe people even that we know, who have a life like that. It doesn't sound encouraging. So I wonder, is there an alternative way of seeing things or experiencing things? Well, let's read the end of chapter 5, verses 19 and 20. And perhaps this is an alternative view. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. And that sounds like an alternative, doesn't it? An alternative view that leads to an alternative experience that's one that comes from God. This is the gift of God. And perhaps some of us have experienced this gift of God, the gift of contentment, the gift of being satisfied with what we have. But clearly this isn't everyone's experience, as the teacher explains in chapter 6, verse 2. God gives some people wealth, possessions, and honor, so that they lack nothing their hearts desire, but God does not grant them the ability to enjoy them, and strangers enjoy them instead. This is hevel, a grievous evil. So we have these two views of things, but it's here that we have the problem. When it comes to wealth and possessions, it's easy for us to think, if only we had more money, a better job, better pay, or if we won the lottery perhaps, then we'd be happier, we'd have it made. But as the teacher observes, there are people who have a lot but don't enjoy what they have, people who are not satisfied even though they are well off. And in chapter 5, verse 10, we read that whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is hevel. And Jesus himself said, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. And this is where we have an advantage over the teacher. We today have an advantage over the person who's writing these words. We live at a time where we can know about Jesus. We can have access to the things that Jesus said and taught. And not only that, we can also learn from those whom Jesus taught. And in particular, the Apostle Paul, who wrote about Jesus, saying this: you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you, through his poverty, might become rich. And this is a whole different take on what it means to be rich. Paul, who wrote that about Jesus, also wrote this instruction to Timothy. He said, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the age to come, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. And we can see it's like a different world. It's a different perspective. We have a great advantage over the teacher because we have an answer to the questions that he was asking at the end of chapter 6. Chapter 6, verse 12. Who knows what is good for a person in life during the few and meaningless days they pass through like a shadow? Who can tell them what will happen under the sun after they are gone? The answer to those questions is Jesus. Jesus is the one who knows what is good for a person in life. Jesus is the one who can tell us what will happen after. And even though reading through the book of Ecclesiastes can leave us feeling somewhat depressed or disheartened or disorientated, There is another perspective for us to embrace. And if we're asking the question, as I've often found myself doing in recent weeks, what is the point? What's the point and the purpose to life? What are we living for? What hope is there? The answer is Jesus. And Jesus provides the answers to the questions that we want to know the answers to. The answers that we are seeking to life's questions, the greatest questions. And not just us, everyone. Everyone has the same questions. The book of Ecclesiastes raises questions about life, about our lives, about the future, about our futures, just as we've read together this morning. And Ecclesiastes points us to Jesus. And we can find hope in him. And that's why we're doing this. That's why we're working our way through the book of Ecclesiastes, even though it's hard going, even though it can make us feel depressed and discouraged. It points us to Jesus. And Jesus knows what is good for a person in life. He shows us how to live. He enables us to have life that is really life. And I hope we can see that or begin to glimpse that. The book of Ecclesiastes and this passage, it raises lots of questions. But if we have questions, let's ask them. If you've got a question this morning about what I've said, then talk to someone, talk to me. Jesus is the answer to all our questions, to all our difficulties, to all our problems. He's done it all. He's with us. He's promised to be with us always to the end of the age. So we're going to respond now in song. The band will come up. And let's sing in worship to God, but also use these words as a prayer, as a way of acknowledging who Jesus really is, acknowledging what he means to us, acknowledging our dependence on him, our need for him.